Hello and welcome to the podcast, What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded though by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Children are our future, and the very existence of the human race depends on what we teach them. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. Love and respect are essential for building relationships, something that Philippa Scott is working to develop through her work with parents and expectant parents. As a doula with a degree in social science, majoring in sociology, Philippa experienced firsthand the effects of birth trauma for new parents, recognizing that those without a village of support often struggle to cope post-birth. Furthering her study to become a childbirth educator and TRTP practitioner, the Richards Trauma Process, I discovered that the greatest influence on her career path actually started with her own parenting experience. Welcome, Philippa, and thank you so much for joining me today. It's amazing to think that people like you wanted to talk to someone who was developing a podcast.
I've been there, done that, still doing it, and it's my pleasure.
I understand you coach parents and people who are planning to be parents, and I was wondering, what parenting techniques were you aware of when you began planning your own family?
None. I'm pretty sure that's actually fairly typical of the Australian public. I got to about 5 months pregnant with my first baby, and I kept having these reoccurring dreams that I was bringing home a six-month-old from the hospital whom I'd never fed, bathed, changed anything. I'd never done anything for them. So then this dream kept coming. And my mum said to me, "Do you think maybe it's telling you you need to learn something?" And I was like, "Oh, maybe." So I went and bought a book. And the book that I bought was absolutely fabulous, because what it did was actually give me an array of parenting styles and showed me, I guess, that in every decision I made as a parent, there was a number of options available to me. And it gave me some feedback and some stories from parents who had chosen to do those different things and what it was like for them. And it went through things like breastfeeding, bottle feeding, combination, post-sleeping, cot sleeping, in the room with you in a separate bed, like all the different options that are available. I didn't necessarily talk about parenting styles, but just the different options that we had at different points in our children's lives. And it went through to 5 years old, but it was fabulous and the dreams went away. But that was about it. That's all I did prior to having a baby.
Most people learn through the modelling of parenting they are raised with. So did that give you a good baseline or foundation?
Look, I think I was very lucky in lots of ways. My dad was a fabulous dad. He wasn't a great partner, but he was a good dad when he was there. He wasn't there a lot. So there was a lot of, it was a fairly typical home in that sense, but my parents were ministers for much of my life, and we did a lot of traveling. So there were a lot of highs and a lot of lows as well. There was a lot of stress in our home. So I certainly carried some scars from that, but I also had lots of, my dad and my mum both believed that I could be or do anything I wanted to. And so I was given the gift of confidence, but it came with its own scars, I guess you could say.
Given that you've now taken it to a whole nother level, why did you want to extend the knowledge you were learning to others through coaching and therapy?
For me, it happened with a falling apart. So when my eldest got to 16, so I had a 16, a 15, a 13, and a 9-year-old, and my third child got diagnosed with autism. And it had been really hard parenting in teen years. I felt like the earlier childhood stuff, that was, you know, pretty easy or came more naturally to me. But my own story as a kid got to a really hard place around that 15, 16-year-old mark. And typically your hardest time with your children will be the hardest time you experienced as a child. And so I got to 16 with my eldest. The third was diagnosed with autism and I fell apart. I was working 50 hours a week. I was doing a university degree. I was studying a cert for, and I had particularly one child who I just couldn't seem to find any answers for. And when the diagnosis came through, my whole system shut down. And it didn't shut down because I was devastated by it. It shut down because all of a sudden we had an answer and I didn't have to fight for this child the same way anymore. And my adrenals just said, oh, yeah, we're having a little sleep now and we're not going to work anymore. And I fell apart physically and emotionally and I couldn't function. And I was in a fairly high stress job with lots of responsibility. So I thought, well, maybe if I just get a different job, I'll be able to survive. And that's really all I was thinking at the time was I just need to be able to survive. And in the process of looking for that job, I actually found the solution. I found a therapy that would, and I didn't think I had any trauma, by the way, and a lot of us don't. And it's not until I looked back later that I realized that I actually did have trauma in my life. But in going through that process, I was able to heal and my adrenals healed and I was able to come back to the world in a place that wasn't just surviving, but it was thriving. And my journey in life has always been to be able to teach from my experience in the hopes to prevent others from having the same pain and help them get in a bit earlier so that they don't have to do it quite so hard for quite so long. I'm very open to sharing that journey with people because I would like to be able to serve the world and leave it a better place for me having been here. And so, you know, that started for me when I had a bad birth experience and then I was able to then teach and mentor other women to not have that kind of experience for themselves. So when I was able to come back and be the parent that I wanted to be the parent that I knew I should be the parent that my children deserved, I knew that there were lots of other mothers and fathers around me who could benefit from the same journey of learning that I had been on. And you know what? It actually just feels really, really, really good to be able to have a relationship with my children and to view them as a person I'm having a relationship with. And that wasn't possible for me before because I was so overwhelmed with day-to-day stuff that I couldn't sit in relationship with my children because I couldn't sit in relationship with myself.
So what was it about the techniques that you learned that you felt empowered as opposed to overwhelmed?
Well, I guess the first thing was about learning that my unconscious scripting was holding me in a pattern. It was actually keeping me where I was. And so by learning to identify those patterns and those underlying core beliefs that hold the pattern in, I was able to change my destiny. I was able to change how I showed up. If we think about a cup of coffee, right? Somebody walks past you, they bump you, you've got a cup of coffee in your hand and it spills. Did they spill coffee on you? No, they just bumped you. You spilled coffee because coffee was what was in your cup. If water was in your cup, that's what would have spilled. If you are bumped in life, whatever is on the inside is what's going to come out. And for me, what was on the inside wasn't great. It was hurt and it was pain. And so by being able to heal that hurt and pain in this therapy that I did and then the techniques that I learned, I don't bump out into coffee anymore. I bump out with joy and love. And yes, that I sometimes still get frustrated with life when there's lots going on. But for the most part, there's just an underlying calm that sits there now. And so when I'm bumped, I don't spill out hurt and pain. I spill out love because that's what's inside.
I feel like that's what everyone wants to spill out, but self-love is often the thing that's missing. And without that, it can be difficult to love someone else unconditionally. Through your work with families, what do you think is the most common challenge that they face that they're looking for assistance with?
I think the biggest challenge is being triggered. So many parents that I work with are triggered, or they think they're triggered by their children, but they're actually being triggered by behaviors or circumstances, and they're reliving their own trauma from their own childhood. And they're so unaware that that's what's actually happening. For the most part, there are a lot of people who are becoming more and more aware that their childhood stuff is coming back in their parenting. Even if they know that it's there, they don't know how to fix it. They don't know how to turn it off so that their children can simply be children and not impact whether or not they experience trauma or not. And it's a lot to put on a child to feel that, you know, that they're triggering you, and that sets up a whole host of new cycles, right? So a lot of parents I speak to want to break the cycle. They just don't know how, and they don't have the tools. And so I feel really blessed and honored to be able to share with them tools to break that cycle, because they want to be amazing parents, but they're just stuck in the cycle. And the cycle begets itself when we don't stand up and be a pattern interrupt. And sometimes, and that's really what this work is. It's a pattern interrupt to send a new pattern out, the one that we want.
I actually realized my parenting style was from my parents when I could hear my mother in my words and tone. And that was when I recognized, and I was fortunate because my children were very young at that point, that I didn't want to be like that. And that was when I first heard about the positive parenting program, or Triple P. How do you think we should approach parenting from an educational perspective?
I think it actually comes back to the education around the fact that it is a relationship. And one of the things we don't do very well is teach our children about relationships. We don't teach them about consent very well. We don't teach them about how to show up for each other. You know, we are lacking in community so badly in this day and age. And if you read Gabor Mate and Gordon Neufeld's book, Hold On To Your Kids, one of the things they talk about in there is this idea that we really need to bring parenting back to relationship and teaching back to relationship. Teachers have it harder today than ever before, but part of the reason for that is because there is no relationship between the children and the education system. So we need to actually fix that. We actually need to teach them how to create relationships along the way with students. And so teachers can't teach a child unless they have a relationship, because relationship is where respect is formed, but it's also where orientation comes in. And kids don't care what you have to say if they don't have a relationship with you, because they don't have enough bandwidth for all of that. So if we're going to teach children, first of all, we have to develop relationships with them. And parenting has to be about a relationship with the child, a relationship that allows that child to have their love bucket overfilled every single day with a dependency that is 110%. They need to know that you will be there to fill their love bucket no matter what they do. And what that does is allows children to create maturity and independence, but they do it from a full bucket. And we need to be teaching that. And we can model that in our teaching system, but we have to change our teaching system, because our teaching system currently doesn't allow for relationships. And it doesn't actually give teachers even the capacity to have relationship with their students. And so we actually need a whole restructure of that system if we're going to be able to model or teach that within our teaching or within our education system.
What role do you feel that disconnect in society is playing in what we're seeing at the moment, which is translated by media as an epidemic of youth crime and accelerating statistics? What would you attribute that change to?
The lack of relationship, the overwhelm that parents experience. community is what is who's meant to raise a child. A child should be able to count on adults in their life. And we have huge numbers of children who cannot count on the adults in their life. For one reason or another, there is a disconnect emotionally. And we can take that all the way back to pregnancy and birth. We have such an incredibly high rate of birth trauma in this country. Those women are disconnected from their children from the get-go. They have to work to create a bond. It's not coming naturally because of the trauma that they've experienced. We don't make them the expert in their experience until we send them home with the baby, and then we tell them that they're an expert until, of course, there's something wrong, and we're not supporting them. So women, if women are the ones who are staying at home, should be surrounded by a team. It does take a village to raise a child. It takes a village to support a mother. And the women that I work with are so tired and they're so overwhelmed by the job of raising a human being on their own for the most part. And even if they have a partner, you know, the partner's then responsible often for bringing in an income, and they often both are, but there's all of this responsibility and no support. They need to have a village around them. And I've got an idea to help teach women how to create community to help parents really call that in for themselves. But if we fixed community, if we fixed relationships between people, we wouldn't have youth crime the way it is now. Those teens are out there doing what they're doing because they're hurting and because they haven't got respect for the system. They haven't got respect for the rules because they don't have relationship with anyone, and they're peer oriented because their peers are the only ones who show up for them because they're all desperately seeking attachment, and they don't have attachment because nobody's showing up for them in a real way. And we need to fix the peer orientation problem. My degree is in sociology. I love looking at how it has happened, and it's been happening over 100 years or so, this shift towards peer orientation. And Woodstock was where, and that whole, you know, free love movement, all of that sort of stuff that happened, created a peer orientation and exemplified peers over parents. So anyone over 30 wasn't to be listened to. And so it's just gotten more and more and more like that. We have children orienting and attaching to their peers because they spend more time with them. But peer orientation is like the blind leading the blind. And so they will do anything it takes for this secure attachment, but they should be getting that from their parents, but they're not, because their parents are not supported and their parents are trying to do an incredibly huge job on their own without tools and with pain often.
Now we're seeing government talking about punishment and making, you know, youth detention a thing, where we're going to add more people to the problem. Now, in the 60s and 70s, corporal punishment was also a standard discipline for children. And recently a political party has raised that they want parents to have their power back to actually discipline their children by hitting them. How do you feel about that as a form of discipline?
Let's pull apart the word discipline. Discipline is discipleship, right? Discipline is about, it's not just about, it's not even about punishment, right? It's about guidance and love and relationship. To be in discipleship with someone is to learn from and want to learn from that person. Corporal punishment and punishment of any kind like that is not going to work. It just makes the wedge, or just pushes the wedge further in and drives them further apart. And we need to go back to where does respect come from? Where does love come from? Where does discipleship come from? And it comes from a place of love, and it comes from wanting to be guided. Unless children want to be guided by you because they have a respect and a relationship with you, doesn't matter what you do, you won't impact them, not in the long term. You might create short-term discomfort and maybe make some of them feel less inclined to do it, but others will go harder. And because it doesn't matter to them, as long as they have the respect of their peers, it's fine because that's who they're attached to. So we need to change the attachment. And hitting our kids doesn't stop them from doing the wrong thing. Little children want to be acceptable to you. They want to do what you want them to do because they seek your guidance. And if we can mentor that through relationships further on into their world, and part of that is about collecting our children regularly, right? So and we talk about collecting our children as a re-establishing relationship. When two lovers get home after a day at work, they collect each other. They, you know, they have a kiss and a cuddle maybe, and they talk about their day and they spend time together. But how many people are doing that collecting in a really purposeful way with their children? They send them off to school and then daycare, and then they come home and they're cooking dinner and they're making, you know, they're doing baths and they're getting ready for the next day and all of those things, and not taking the time to collect their children. And then their children end up orienting and attaching to their peers because they're the ones they spend the most time with. They're not even spending time with adults in the school day. You know, they're either being lectured to, and then in the off time during lunch breaks and so on, they're not spending time with teachers or in relationship and asking questions and learning from the teachers in that casual space, some about things they want to learn about as opposed to the Australian curriculum. So they become more and more peer oriented.
As a GMA to your children's children, how has this knowledge changed the way you influence them as a parent?
Oh, it's huge. My grandbaby is only 15 months old just yet, so we're still very early on in that. But, you know, when I counsel my daughter, when I give her ideas and tools, it is all about relationships. My grandbaby is so lucky. We have four generations on our property. You know, she gets so much adult time and she has aunties around, and so she is really blessed to be in this space because my daughter has a village to help her raise her baby, and that's how it should be. But it's got me thinking, you know, more and more about homeschooling. It's got me thinking more and more about how do we as a village create that education for her so that she doesn't have to be peer oriented. You know, because there are so many of us here, she won't be going to daycare, which is something that we have the luxury of being able to choose. Not everybody has that luxury. But it, you know, I encourage Alana to, you know, when you leave, you need to say goodbye, give her kisses and cuddles, make sure she knows that you're going and that you're coming back. And when you come back to her, lots of kisses and cuddles, lots of collecting her back up again. And it really helped. But all of this learning has come too late for my own as little babies, but certainly I'm looking forward to creating a whole different paradigm for Paisley.
I am looking forward to you creating a whole different paradigm for society in general. I think that you have the power. Following this discussion with you, I feel like there's more topics we can definitely discuss, and I'd love to revisit some of them with you in the future.
I would love that. Thank you, Kim.
Philippa, if people are interested in learning more about you, I know you have a podcast, so where can they find that?
Podcast is on almost every channel I think that it's possible to have it on, but it's Philippa Squared, Parenting by Design, and you can find it on all the big ones, iTunes, and we have a Facebook page and an Instagram page as well, so you can find them there as well.
And information about you is on your website?
Yes, so Philippa, I have philippascott.com and also fantasticfuture.com.au. So on there, you'll find all my blogs and other things and lots of information available to read through. And you can contact me for a free call through there too.
I wish I had known you 30 years ago. Well, actually 35, because my daughter just turned 35 this year and I have three grandbabies, 11, 10 and 9. So I'd really love to discuss more about parenting styles with you to help people understand there's no perfect parent.
Absolutely.
It's been amazing. Thank you so much. And I look forward to chatting with you again soon.
And you. Thanks, Kim.
That's Philippa Scott, the family architect, sharing wisdom beyond her years and providing pathways to parenting by design for fantastic futures. If you'd like to know more about Philippa or any of our guests, you'll find the links in the episode synopsis on my website, kimclyden.com/podcasts, yes with an S. Or you can send us an email via the connection page there. Next time on What We Teach Our Children, we'll explore the fundamental foundations of an ideal childhood with facilitator, coach and counsellor Rowena Hardy, who'll help us understand how the 0 to 5 and 5 to 10 years shape our children through what they see, hear and feel, developing connections to the world around them and with you. Are you enjoying this podcast series? Please let your family and friends know or share it on your social channels. What We Teach Our Children is recorded in Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.